All right, this is the last thing you're going to hear tonight. It's a happy song, but it's got its complicated words, so just listen really hard. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a fucking motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a total motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck him, fuck the motherfucker.
And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Annett. We're back. It's April 8th. Always a joy to be here. Greetings going out to everyone today who is part of Operation Atonement that begins next Sunday, April 15th, and to celebrate that beginning of a global campaign to disestablish the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches, we're going to have on again our friends from Ireland who are actively engaged in this campaign. I want to say hi to everybody out there who's struggling on the ground to turn words into action, and a special greeting to Fran and Katie out on the West Coast. If you're listening in today, I know you're listening in, so carry it on, folks. Today we're going to have back, as you know, if you followed ITCCS.org, you know that our show today is part two with Peter Yellowquill, an Anishinaabe Ojibwe elder from Central Canada, or Ganata, as we call it, those who don't recognize Crown authority in Canada. And Peter's going to be talking with me about a whole number of things, but especially two things: the massive drug trafficking and criminality going on Indian reservations in Canada, and especially on his Long Plains Reservation, but also the struggle to revive his culture in the face of looming extermination. And that's what we're talking about all the time, the spiritual and political attacks occurring on us. Now, in that sense, before I bring Peter on, I wanted to run something by all of you. A very important piece of information came in today from ITCCS in Europe. On summer solstice, June 21st, guess who's going to speak in Geneva to the World Council of Churches, which are ostensibly the federation of non-Catholic Christian churches in the world? Yes, Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio. He's going there to bring greetings and talk about the unification of churches in the world. We know what that means. And it's happening on summer solstice in one of the centers in the world of documented satanic killings. Geneva is one of those places. What's also disturbing is that appearing with Bergoglio, who, as we know, is an active member of the Ninth Circle Satanic cult, is two other members of that cult who were indicted in our second common law case in Brussels in 2014, in the summer of 2014. Besides Bergoglio, the others will be Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and Adolfo Pichon, former head of the Jesuits, who stepped down, yet the three of them are going to be there in Geneva. Now, two points here. Churches that decide to get together again with a Catholic church, like the Church of England has already done, are entering into a large global criminal conspiracy called Crimen Solicitanus, where when children are harmed, the police are not to be told. When you reunite with Rome, that's what happens. You come under Crimen Solicitanus. Second part, as we know, is that the Ninth Circle is active, especially in Central Europe, and we believe that this gathering is going to be yet again another cover for satanic ritual killings at the time. So we are investigating that actively. By we, I mean the ITCCS in Europe. Please stand by. This shows you the urgency of what we're doing. Operation Atonement next week. If you go to our website, itccs.org, you'll see the latest posting is about something I want to briefly mention. The basis for a lot of our actions occurred 10 years ago when Chief Capilano, traditional elder of the Squamish Nation in Vancouver, Canada, issued an eviction notice against the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches in Vancouver. Over 100 churches, he said, we never gave you permission to build on our land or capture and destroy our children. You are now to leave. And he empowered myself to be his legal agent to enforce that eviction order and to make sure that justice was done. So this eviction order was a lot of what preceded the actions we did in Europe, including the historic exorcism in October 2009 that actually started not only eventually compelled the resignation of Pope Benedict, but really opened up this whole can of worms. So please go to that article. It's called Lest We Forget, The Eviction and the Occupation That Changed Canada Forever, because after that eviction and our occupation of Holy Rosary Cathedral, within a few weeks, Canada announced their so-called Truth and Reconciliation Commission. They weren't stupid. They knew they had to take the heat off the churches now that they were coming down on them in a big way. And so please read that. At the base of the article, at the end of it, you'll see a leaflet that you can run off. It's called the Cease and Desist Order to Your Local Catholic Church. Starting April 15th, please hand that out, post it at local Catholic churches. Get it in the hands of Catholics and tell them they're part of a criminal conspiracy. Final thing, I know Peter is standing by, but just a final thing to mention. Next week, we learned from the folks in Ireland that judges in Ireland are actively engaged in helping get people evicted from their homes. They're actually getting a 6% commission from the banks responsible for evicting people from the homes, calling in their mortgages. Then the judges get paid off for cooperating. Then the children who are on the street get picked up by this private company, Tusla, to then be trafficked, according to the orders of the same judges. Now, you know, this triangle going on here, big money, the courts, the churches, the government, the same triangle of infamy and genocide that killed off Native people in Canada and is doing so all over the world. So we're going to, I've flagged that for you because next week we're going to have those folks on. And again, follow our work, murderbydecree.com, itccs.org. Now, Peter Yellowquill is with us now. Greetings, Peter.
Hello, everyone.
It's good to have you back, brother. And, you know, I was mentioning in the intro that we are really facing an onslaught today, spiritually, politically, attacks on our land, on our children. And I want to kind of talk today about carrying on from last week, some of the specific crimes going on your reservation and who's responsible, whether it's the drug trafficking or whatever, and how we can, how you are trying to resist this. We can talk about that. So I wanted to let you just kick off on that.
Yes, I think that one of the greater demons, I guess, that we're facing is, as well as all the fallout from the residential schools, we've now got going from cocaine to crack, now to crystal meth. But that cocaine's been on the council table here since about 1998, 1999, and it began to grow, and it's never been off there. We've had, like I said, I think we've got about 14, 16 dealers, and some of them are doing meth. And in all those years, the mounted police did absolutely nothing. They were told, I worked and lived with the elders, that we're trying to protect these generations that are into this this pit. And I know what they were doing. They were telling the RCMP, here's the dealer, here's the connection. You want a license plate number, here it is. But I don't recall one instance where the RCMP did anything about the hardcore dealers. There was a bust about 10, 12 years ago, but it was just for some pot. But this guy was a friend of mine, and he says the hardcore dealers had 48 hours notice.
But from who? Who gave them the notice, Peter?
Well, it happened this way. And the RCMP and the chief meet periodically. Right? It's either the chief himself, Dennis Meeches, or an RCMP officer who let him know, right? Or let it out. But we think it's him because we have not only a drug problem, we have a gangster thing happening here too also, right? So there was these two guys, one Dennis and then the other the gangster type. They were literally set up all these connections and these so we have a generation of young people that are into real hardcore crack, meth, everything now. It's a life and death struggle for us, right? Yep. What really ticks me off is that in all that time, the RCMP did nothing, and the Dakota Ojibwe Police Service did next to nothing also. And that's our own police service. It seems like the elders were saying, you know, it seems like they're protecting this guy or they're protecting this little empire that's growing. But in all that time, during the period I was chief, I was charged 9 times by the RCMP. I was handcuffed 3 times and then fingerprinted.
On what charge? That's made up?
All manners of charges, anything, even a 50-cent letter with my signature on, they charge me, okay? Anything that anybody would say, they literally come after me. And, yep. and since that time, between my son and I, I've had, I think, another 14, 15 charges, two again recently. My son had four charges. My daughter filed a complaint against the RCMP because when she was, they threw her in the overnight, and she said there was money missing, and that's not the first complaint. So she was roughed up in the cell, she just beat two charges by the RCMP. This is an onslaught that goes all the way back to 1870. There was a letter in 1870. We had jailed some of our people already, and we were asking for compensation because they were taking the men away from earning a living for their families. And of course, we get to the residential school, which is another jail.
Peter, they out on the West Coast, it's a known fact that the RCMP are heavy drug into the drug dealing. They're business partners with Hells Angels. They deal the drugs. They were responsible for making a lot of the Native women and families go missing. Is this more of the same in Long Plains, do you think?
We have heard. Now, these things are really, really hard to prove, right? But what we know, there is a connection there with the Hells Angel, and we have heard that there's some dirty officers. But it's really, really difficult. And I'm telling you, if you stand up, like I think I was altogether 24 charges. And what I was trying to do was trying to keep our community straight, keep it honest, and try and put up with, like some of the other families, trying to put up a fight against some of this stuff, right?
Did he get
what's
much
happened
support?
Is we have not had a meeting to do of any consequence with our tribal members going on 20 years or more. The corruption is almost normal now, right? It's almost normal, and it all arises out of the Indian Act. Some of our people think that band custom is tribal custom. That's two different things. Now, what band custom is just a warmed over Indian Act, and it still sets up the same dictatorships. And you cannot, and I'm witness to this, you cannot stand against them. I tried everything. Even when I was chief, I tried to clean up the corruption. I went all the way to the Auditor General's office. There was a few instances of fraud, outright fraud, and everybody agreed, the RCMP, the OTC Police Service, the Regional Director General for Indian Affairs, everybody agreed it was fraud.
But nobody did anything.
We get a letter from the Department of Justice saying they can do anything they want with that money, and I'm saying, what? So that lifts the criminal code, right? It lifted the criminal code because the Crown Attorney was saying it was fraud. But when that letter came in, you see, and I have the letter. It's wide open. It's wide open. There's literally nothing we could do at Long Plains to prevent what happened. Nor could we stand up against the drug dealers or the cocaine that's on that table. And that cocaine is still there. And I kept throwing it in the RCMP station. Why in the hell don't you guys do something? If you're not doing anything, then you're supporting this thing.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, he says, hey, look, you see that man there? I got pissed off. Says, that guy's running coke. Shut up, yellow quill. That's all I got.
Okay. Your cop said shut up?
So, yeah.
Well, there you go, collusion. But, you know, Peter, I had a friend, Wilf Price, a Haida man, who was going to the Assembly of First Nations, and he said that it's commonly known that the top chiefs, at least, got to do whatever the hell they wanted on the reserve, and in return, they would do whatever the government wanted them to do, sign away their land, sign away treaty rights, whatever. So is that what's going on, do you think, in Long Plains?
Well, look, we kind of ticked the RCMP off. We took the Air Force Base, the South Fort Air Force Base, twice in the 90s to press our claim. One had to do with the shortfall of land. There was a land quantum there. But everyone across Canada, as I understand, had signed off on the compensation, and that wasn't good enough for us. We took the Air Force Base a second time, and we won. At least the door was open for compensation, right? Same like if Farmer A ripped off Farmer B. Farmer B would get certain levels of compensation. That the police were already coming after me at that time because I told them right to their faces, look, we outrode you, we knocked you off your horses. You know, you've been at this right through the residential schools. We remember yellow stripes and dogs and guns. Come on. And the way they were treating our people, beating them up, you know, the way they were treating our women. But you see, some of our people collaborate. They're willing to compromise everything, right? And the land that we won and the money that we won, I'd say we won $16.5 million just for the land purchase. And there was another, we took a $60 million hit on the compensation because these guys went to bed with the crown, right?
Right.
Dennis Meacher and his group. And now we're out 20,000 acres we're not going to be able to purchase for our children. You see?
Yep.
Because they've pissed away some of that money.
Peter, I wanted to ask
about
the
And we couldn't do nothing.
I want to ask about the child trafficking going on in your territory as well. Can you talk about that?
It's hard to put a finger on it, but we know what's going on. Okay, we know what's it's happening, but I'm telling you, like we're very, very frustrated. We're very frustrated. Our agencies are becoming like Children's Aid. We're seeing the same thing, and the word from even from grassroots people is just like the residential school all over again. Right? And we're trying to stop. Stop the children from disappearing for years and years and years and years. There's all kinds of battles going on in that area. But if you're a grassroots member and you have a battle to fight, you absolutely have no resources to fight with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went through all my pension. We went through all kinds of fighting for our elders. And we're going to be in a court battle right now over one of our grandchildren. But you have no money, right? And then we found this the killer clause. It's the doorway to genocide. It's in the Child Welfare Act. It gives workers absolute godlike authority. They're not answerable to anyone, and they have the protection of the courts. And that's what happened when they began to sell our children across the border. And that law is still there.
Tell them to, like foster care agencies or who? Who were they sold
yes.
to?
The Children's Aid Society of Manitoba. When we began to really find out what was happening, you got to remember, many of us were still coming out of the residential school. Okay, our minds were afflicted and affected, our spirits, our hearts. Then when I come home, I hear about this Children's Aid. And like one of my relatives, every child, they're standing at the womb. And I remember talking to the worker and I says, well, aren't you supposed to help? I mean, I was slapped with some arrogance. And I couldn't believe this, but now I find out why. They can do anything they want. Because of what's in this law, we ran up against it in one of our cases, and I don't hear any chief, I don't hear any council, I don't hear any of our native agencies talking about trying to change that part of the law. Because what's happening is our agencies have put on the Children's Aid coat; they're bound by this law, the agreements are signed. But where's the resistance? Where's the resistance? You know, we have jurisdiction. And we can say to this, no, we'll reject this part of the law, and then we will begin to heal our families. No one is demanding the return of any of our children. We want them all back. There's grassroots people that want all the children back, right? But yeah. It's a big industry.
Well, talk about that industry. Who else is involved?
Well, our own agencies, we've got chiefs that support this thing. We've got chiefs that don't, mind you, but they're all kind of just spinning their wheels right now. Instead of saying, well, let's go on the offensive here. You know, let's go on the offensive and attack that legislation. Bring it out to the world that the genocidal legislation is still there.
Yep.
Right? But let's stop filling your travel claims, you know. Like This is our grassroots people are just basically saying, well, they must be more interested in their travel claims than our rights. See?
You know, Peter, I remember I went down to Chavez, Mexico in the 80s. I met some of the Mayan people there, and they were devastated. They were like, they had been attacked by the Guatemalan army and everything. They had nothing, but what they had, the one first thing they built in the refugee camp was a school where they could pass on their language and their traditions to their children. Mm-hmm. That was the most important thing. And I thought, these are real people in touch with themselves, right? Do you find mm-hmm. that with what you're doing? Like, is this the priority?
We had this dream, right, even while we're still suffering the effects of this genocide, that we could take over and build our own school and do better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That we could retrieve our language, that we could begin to teach our children that in fact you are valuable, that you're a creation of God, that you're not Indians, you're Ojibwe's, and this is your language, and these are the spiritual beliefs and values that we were given, and as well as introduce the word in its real light, not some religious light. But what began to happen, I know at Long Plain, is the drugs from the council table, they filtered right into the school. I think our dropout rate is higher than it ever was.
It's going into the school, you said?
We collapsed because the Indian Act allows one family rule. It allows dictatorships.
Yep.
And we cannot. We tried everything. We talked to commercial crime about some of the stuff that's going on with the RCMP. They literally expect you to investigate yourself and bring them the evidence.
Right. And then they don't do anything.
If you have a group that's in total control, you can't even get minutes, that type of thing. But what happened to our school? Our kids were leaving there, and I've seen this with my own eyes. They'd get to the school in town, and they would not have the grade. I saw one young student. They said she had grade 9 when she left Long Plain. They tested her. She only had grade 4. We've got dropouts now, and no one is lifting a finger. So what that means is we have to do it. We're pushing now that there's got to be a change in the government here. I'll give you an example. With all these things going on, the collapse, the crushing of our young people's dreams, their lack of education, all the drugs are coming in. Dennis Meads and his group, they announced an $80 million two hotels that they're going to build, one in Winnipeg and one at Long Plain, or on Long Plain land. Those plans are insane. How can you take our kids' money and spend it on these white elephants?
Mm-hmm.
We know what they are. This just came out a few weeks ago, and yet our children are suffering. Now people are trying to make sure that if they can get this vote and they can defeat these guys, we may have a chance to at least begin to sit down together and put our minds together and put our hearts together and listen to one another and listen to the cries of our children, because they are suffering. There's enough of us, I believe, elders, young people, mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, that have seen what's been going on. We hope our eyes are open now. That then we can get together, and then we can stand to fight for our children.
Do you find you're getting any support from other Indigenous nations or even white people in your community? I mean, active support, not just passive.
Well, there's not too much anyone can do actively. At least it's not that I can see. But they can pray. The only way we're getting through this is by prayer, I'm telling you. The only way, right? The drug especially, that's kind of the root cause. It's in the administration. It's in the education. It's in every aspect of our life.
Well, let's say, for example, by active, I meant you document who's dealing the drugs, you broadcast that, you get people educated across Manitoba and the country about what's going on in the reserve. I mean, that's one way it would help, wouldn't it?
No one can get on the radio. I tried, and they tried to charge me. I've tried to get on that radio two or three times about the real issues that we're facing as a people, as this part of the Ojibwe nation and Lakota, Oyate, this part of that nation, and you can't get on there.
You mean on the reserve?
It's a banana republic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but I meant outside the reserve.
Outside the reserve, I'm telling you, there's nothing that they'll be able to do. The citizens in Portage in the area, they're beginning to face the same thing now. What people are calling the meth crisis. That crisis has been a long plane for going on 20 years now. And it's deep. And I can tell you this right now, Kevin, from the bottom of my heart, with all my soul and the mind that I've got left, so to speak, that no one is going to help us. It is up to us and only us. If we don't do it, then we're dead in the water.
Yep.
If these people vote the same ones in, then we're dead in the water, because we're like, even like, it's devastation for some of these kids. We've got kids that have grade zero, grade one, that are 14 years old. I know. I worked with one when I was in justice for a while before I got fired.
I wanted to ask you something about your traditions. Like in a lot of cultures, there's stories of creation stories, and one often you hear stories of like, people die off. There's a complete die-off, and a few survive, and that remnant go on to found a new culture. Do you have that? You know, the Christians call it the flood, whatever, but do you have those kinds of stories, and do you think we're in that situation now?
Well, we've listened to many of the old people, and there has, in our culture, there's teaching about a flood, yes, and although it might be dressed different, but there's also prophetic, right? And we saw the quote unquote the white man coming, and we were warned. But our children are having dreams. My son is having dreams. I'm having dreams. But we've got no place to really get together. It's one for another. We have been warned at Long Plain. There was a four or five tornadoes that came through there in one day, and caused no death, but devastation. And this was just a couple of summers ago. And that's never happened to our people. So we've been warned. And
so the
spiritual warfare, all the spiritual things, they're still happening, right? We're still dreaming dreams. We're still having visions. But there's also a lot of false prophets around, right? There's lots of people that would take advantage, like get paid $2,500 for prayer even. You know, this is what's going on. We kind of tend not to listen to anybody who comes in with a Bible, really, except that those of us who have come to know what the word is, that it's not about religion, that it's about faith, and that we are in there. Our customs, some of our customs are in there, and this is what we're trying to show.
We heard from people.
Deep wound, right, from the residential school.
There's nations all over Turtle Island that talk about Jesus coming to them before the whites came, you know, issuing a warning about them. Do you have that tradition?
Well, what we were told is that the last time I was told this for the third time, it was a Dakota man. They were from the States originally, but they moved to Long Plain. He said that the Savior of the world, we were waiting for the Savior of the world, as we were told that he was going to come. And what he said was, when the white man came, we found out that he'd already come and gone and been killed. See? But
right.
And there's different talk of a bearded man, right? There's different ways they talk about him, but they do talk about a son of God. And what clouds the issue, what clouds the clarity is all that's happened in the residential schools. You got to remember, they were being beaten, and these people were supposed to represent Jesus Christ. They're supposed to represent the God of creation. And I tell you this, in residential school, you weren't taught nothing about your culture, absolutely nothing, even about love. I never heard the word I love you in all the years I was there, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful, powerful thing. It's a powerful teaching. They call it the law of love. Yes, we understand it now. These things that God gave us, in my mind, they have the same weight as the Ten Commandments, because they're God-given. And that's the laws of respect and honor and courage and wisdom and these things and then love, you know, that law of love. What our people, I learned, are the eternal laws. They call them eternal because of where they came from and who gave them, right? And they're binding. They're binding laws. But you've got generations of people who didn't get some of these teaching till we're in our 50s and 60s now. And so we're trying to reconcile even our teachings and the biblical teachings about the word of the Lord, the Word Himself, to what's happening around us. And a lot of people are just literally forget it. You know, talk about tradition? Nah. Talk about the Lord? Nah.
Well, so maybe there's such a level of
And that's the most dangerous thing I've ever seen in my life, okay, for our culture and our people.
When people get such in despair, I mean, you get the sense of, well, what can you do? And, like, I mean, you've articulated some of that today, that feeling that we're at a dead end in a way, you know?
Well, I believe we've got one more opportunity, at least, I think, anyway. And maybe I'm just getting old. Maybe I'm just kind of, you know what I mean? I've been at this since 72, 73, when I first walked into Long Plains and seen the good, and then began to really see what was happening underneath the rot. And then I began to see those traditional values begin to be restored and then undermined by our own people, and begin to wrestle with the Word of God and truly what it meant for us as a people, as nations together. But I see a lot of our young people, like we're gangster, okay? Like Long Plains gangster, it's that. It's really, the drugs are very deep. And it's going to take each and every one of us, the elders, the young people, because some of these people want out. They want out, but there's nothing there for them. We have healing lodges and that type of stuff, but they come back, it's the same old place, right? It's like going into space, right, what that song says, it's the same old place. So a lot of us have been talking the last number of years about we've got to address it from our hearts and our minds, see? And the resources that are being poured into these out to cockroach lawyers and to people that are making all these harebrained schemes, there are millions and millions and millions of our dollars that should have been going to our kids. We're going to try and get those back and start putting it to where it can do us some good.
Peter, I got a question here. It just came in on the board from a listener, and I know you've talked about this before, but the question is, can you talk about any of the bad things that happen in residential school in the ones you were in?
The bad things?
Well, by that I assume they mean serious crimes. I mean, it's all serious, but I meant
the sexual abuse and those things and the violence against us. These were literally acts of terror. They began the first night, and they carried on for years. And it was unrestricted. I didn't know that the administrator at the Brandon Residence School was one of the abusers. And these were literal pedophile rings. Okay.
That United Church, right?
Well, but it was probably run by the United Church, but more, I think it was like also the civil service. As I understand it, the church didn't actually run the school. It is by the civil service.
Well, they
but
both
nevertheless,
did.
Nevertheless, joint operation. Yeah, yeah, it's what I mean, yeah. But the abuse came from the church, some of the church, not all of them. The abuse came from the civil service, civil servants, supervisors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
But to
be beaten bloody, you know, like those are crimes, right? Those are crimes. And we were kids for crying out loud, right? We're just children. You have to know there was no place to go. We didn't know how to pray. we had to just live with, take it and live with it. And we had to bury the hurt and these criminal actions. We had to bury them deep because there was absolutely nowhere we could go. But I do believe this, that some of the people that did come there did try to deal with it. Because we recall a couple of supervisors on our side anyway that treated us like the children we were, right? And we'd laugh with them, and it seemed okay, but they didn't last long.
No, of course, they always forced the humane ones out. That was the whole pattern.
The whole system is geared to perpetuate the crimes.
Yep, like today.
Because there was no hindrance whatsoever. No hindrance.
Right. I remember the day you took me to, I guess it was either the Portage La Prairie or the Brandon School, but you stood there, and we got you on film describing this, Peter, that you said when you walked into the door, the administrator pointed to the left or to the right, like at Auschwitz, right?
Well, basically, that's it, yeah. And you're given a number, and you're given a number. You're triggering my memory because there's one door I can't go through. I was sent upstairs a number of times, and I always see the man sitting there. But I can't go through that door, Kevin.
In your memory,
you mean? I can't. I've tried, and I've tried, and I've tried. I prayed. And I know the reason, but I just can't go through it, and I'm blocked. But also I know that there's unmarked graves out there.
Yep.
It's one of the things we found out, that there's unmarked graves around there. There was one field, it was a beautiful field we never seemed to play in. But my sister told me later that there was unmarked graves in that particular field. That's why I guess we never played there.
Brandon or Portage?
Brandon.
Yep.
I went to Portage for a number of years also. Right now, at this very moment, I am at a place called Pilot Mound in Manitoba, and I'm sharing this with the congregation out here. And it's kind of trying on me right now because it still weighs heavy on my heart and my mind. But I find that by talking to people and talking to my family, you know, my family and I, my brothers and my sisters, have never, ever, ever talked about what happened to us, not to one another. And we're all in our 60s, 70s. We rarely talk. That separation is still in our hearts. And I just hope one day that maybe we can. But if not, too, I guess that's just the way it's going to go, you know. I know that some of our people that never said anything, they didn't want to approach the process. They just took it to their graves, and they buried that. They buried that anger. They buried all those things deep, deep, deep down. All the abuses they suffered, whatever they suffered, they just buried it deep. And I mean, to me, it's sad to me, but that's just the way these things happen sometimes. But we see. We see the generational fallout. We see that genocidal fallout all around us now. And it's not all doom and gloom, but it's really difficult to see daylight right now with what's going on, at least in our community. And I know I'm hearing from other communities. It doesn't matter if it's one in the States or in Canada. All our First Nations people are going through basically the same thing, the poverty, all this thing. We received a call from, I think it was South Dakota, right after we did the CBC interviews, and there's a group down there that's trying to get something moving down there with the boarding schools, I guess as they call them, and they're running into a lot of resistance.
There's one in South Dakota that's still operating. The Catholic Church runs it in the southern
mm-hmm.
state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm talking about a group of people that are trying to force the issue out in the open and seek compensation or that type of thing. And they're running into a lot of. We just had one contact, and we want to connect with them and support them.
there was a, that's good, because there was a case that was brought against the Jesuits. They settled out of court, and the state senators arranged it so that nobody could be charged. You know, the government moved right in to protect the church.
Well, that's what happened here. I mean, in Canada, I mean, if you can recall when we were, I was at the Forks with Judge Sinclair there, and what our people were being told, as I understand it, was you can't name names.
At the TRC.
I mean, that process was already flawed in that sense, because I was honored by our people. It was hurtful to hear. But they began to name names. Right?
They weren't allowed to take down
Sinclair had a judicial duty. Once he found out there was a crime, he should have took it to the RCMP. He's been given names.
Including in a crime.
Okay? Yeah, and so in that sense, like immunity, de facto immunity, we're saying was given to all the perpetrators, whether they were in the churches, whether they were civil servants, whether they were RCMP officers or dentists and groups that came into the residential schools to commit their crimes.
Right, de facto immunity is the word.
We'll never get justice for that, and I kind of see that with the murdered missing women. And I was watching it, and it's very painful for me to watch, but I watch it once in a while. They're the same thing is happening.
Yep.
No one's going to go after the police officers who deliberately, you know, didn't do their duty. Who, in effect, are covering up these crimes. Not all of them, but enough of them.
Yeah.
That is significant.
Peter, I want to go back to
they're never going to be brought to justice.
I want to go back to something you said about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Winnipeg. You said people were told not to name names. Literally at the meeting they were told that by Murray Sinclair?
That's what I understand was happening. Now, I'd want to go out and say I actually heard it, but I know I've heard it there somewhere that they were told not to, to do this thing. But everybody just went ahead and did it anyway.
Yeah, good.
You see?
No, I mentioned it because in Victoria, B.C., there were people who tried to name names were actually escorted out of the hall. So I just wanted to check if the same thing was happening in Winnipeg.
And that's what kills the TRC, right?
Yep.
Like, it's one thing to go there and lay out your soul, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But I can tell you this right now, not all of it was told. Not all of it was told.
No, only a fraction.
There's a lot of people held back.
Yep.
But
Peter, we've got about 4 minutes left here, and I wondered if you have a final message or anything you want to share.
I just want to say to all the grassroots listeners in all our communities, we know our afflictions, we know our oppressors, and if they happen to have our own faces, that's the more difficult. But I want to encourage them not to lose hope. For the Christian community, maybe for the traditional community, we know we're fighting principalities and powers, spiritual wickedness in high places. We know these spiritual forces that we were fighting before the Europeans came, and they're still there, and the battle's still raging. But I want to share with them that, you know, our prayers are for our children, our community, to overcome this thing. It's huge. It's this spiritual warfare is nothing like we've ever seen in all our history. And we need every prayer. We need a deep understanding of one another and support one another.
And to the
Canadian community, our neighbors, just pray.
Is there a way people can read? I know people are listening to the show today who live in Western Manitoba, and I'm wondering if there's anything you could suggest to them, a way they can directly help or make contact with you.
Well, there's a lot of moving right now about reconciliation, right? Although, like I said, I have reservations about the TRC. I still have a great issue with the way we were manhandled.
Oh yeah, right? How can you reconcile when the truth is being buried?
That's right, and but still at the same time. Our neighbors need to understand. Some of our neighbors were aghast at what had happened. They didn't. They thought everything was okay, or that type of thing. But now they know, and I think I see anyway with our neighbors is a kind of a deeper understanding now of of why the way things are. But it's our responsibility at the First Nations levels to deal with it. Right? And it's difficult, I know, because now we're up against our own people that are basically doing the same thing. Right?
Yep.
But I can't see any other way than following that spiritual path we were given originally, but also, which in my mind, into the new covenant, which is Jesus Christ, and that passion, and finding out what it really means for us, and to continue praying and continue fighting. Standing up, you know, standing in the gap is just, it's going to go on. But right now, we face the greatest danger in our history as a people, because these spiritual guns, these spiritual forces are aimed directly at our children. Yep. And we have to shelter them.
We have
to fight that spiritual warfare.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter,
are you there?
Yeah, it's been good to having you on again. And you know, words don't suffice, but you know, we'll be in touch. We'll keep working together.
Amen. Yeah. Okay. Very good. I want to say to everyone that's listening, thank you so much for just hearing my voice or giving me the opportunity to say a few words.
Okay, brother. We'll talk to you again. Thank you.
Yes, good. Thanks.
Bye. Okay. Peter Yeliquil from the Long Plains Reservation, Western Manitoba. And it's interesting because Peter's home is just north of where I had my first church with the United Church back in 1990. And a little anecdote I think is relevant. I remember getting up at a first Brandon Presbytery meeting, and I kind of asked the people that, you know, the first Gulf War was going on at that point, and I said, you know, I think as Christians we should take out a full-page ad, picture of Saddam Hussein, and just put under it, love your enemy. And you wouldn't believe the uproar that caused in the Presbytery meeting. I was accused of dishonoring our war vets. I was accused of wanting to pull down Canada, and I said, hey, don't blame me, blame Jesus. It's his words, right? So here's the thing, you know, Peter talked about Jesus Christ, but when he says it and when my people said it, it's two different things. It's like the word reconciliation. Reconciliation in the mouth of a white person means reconciliation. It means resubordinate people. It means get them back in line and make it so that we, the conquerors, can feel good about ourselves so we don't have to give up anything. But the truth is that we have destroyed ourselves through this genocide. Go to murderbydecree.com. You'll see all the hard evidence for that. Everything we've talked about today that Peter touched on, the genocide in the residential schools, everything else is documented in there over 25 years. It's the only independent account you're ever going to see in Canada of this evidence that the government, the churches, have all systematically buried. They had document destruction teams going into the schools back in the 1960s, getting rid of all the hard evidence of these crimes, although we've found bits and pieces of it and put it together in that book, Murder by Decree, The Crime of Genocide in Canada, a counter-report to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. You can get that at murderbydecree.com, amazon.com. Just put in Kevin Annett, A-N-N-E-T-T. You'll see all my books. And it's very important to have that in mind as we go into Operation Atonement next week, because this is a global system of destruction. It's still going after the children. It's going after people more and more everywhere. It's the corporatocracy, that connection, triangle between church, state, and the corporate sector that has been responsible historically for genocide. And we have our backs to the wall, people, all of us. And often we can't see this until it happens to ourselves or a friend, but the truth is that it's happening as we speak, and it could happen to you next. And so I need you to contact us. I need you to do more than hear this. I need you to get out there and act on what you know. You have a responsibility with the knowledge given to you, a sacred responsibility. The life of children is in your hands once you have this knowledge. Our personal responsibility, that's what distinguishes a slave from a human being. Frederick Douglass, the freed black slave who led the abolitionist movement, said, a slave is not capable of moral responsibility. And I look around us and I see that moral irresponsibility. Everyone looking to somebody else all the time to do it. But you have to do it yourself, for yourself, by yourself, and then link up with others who have broken free of these mental and spiritual shackles in which we were raised as slaves, to always defer to somebody else, to always think the expert or the leader knows more than we do, to look to God somewhere else than within ourselves. So that's the end of my sermon for today, folks, but I thought it was necessary to say all that in the wake of what Peter has raised once again. Now, before closing off, again, remind you that next week we'll have the folks from Ireland back talking about organized child trafficking and their actions. They've been occupying various facilities this last week, and they're going to be talking about that. And also on June 21st in Geneva, the Ninth Circle, what appears to be a Ninth Circle conclave happening in a connection with the Vatican, Jorge Bergoglio, so-called Pope Francis, is going to be showing up to speak to the World Council of Churches. We're going to have more reports about that. And I understand I got a report coming in during the show, and it says that there's a group over there that in Geneva that want to hold a counter-conference to that and a way to get people to leave these false churches and confront the genocide still going on in the Ninth Circle satanic cult. So with all that in mind, urge you to tune in again next week. Follow our work, itccs.org, murderbydecree.com, write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com. And if you have ideas for shows, guests, whoever, please bring them on. Brothers and sisters, until next week, stay strong, stay clear. And we're going out on this song I love, Farewell to the Crown. No more crown authority here or anywhere, folks. Until next week, stay strong. Thank you.